Good afternoon, everyone, on this Wednesday afternoon here on KTOO-FM. I'm Andy Klein, your host for a Juno Afternoon. We've got a great show today, a great show for me today, because I've got a couple of longtime friends on the show, so it's going to be a fun show for me to do. But we're going to be talking all about Friday on this Wednesday, because it's the first Friday coming up, and we're going to have three different segments all about what's happening on First Friday, including Samantha Adams, who's a photographer, and she'll be showing at the Jack. Pat Race from Alaska Robotics will be talking about what they're doing over at the Alaska Robotics Shop for First Friday. And Rob Royce and Kimberly Naylor are here. Rob will be doing First Friday at the City Museum, and we'll be talking to him about that and Kimberly about that as well. We're also going to call into Eagle Crest and find out all about what's happening at Eagle Crest. They're getting lots of snow, and January is Learn How to Snowboard and Ski Month, and we'll be talking to Jeff Reclow about that. Mostly cloudy skies is in the forecast for today with a chance of rain and highs around 36 degrees with light winds, partly cloudy in the evening, and then increasing clouds with snow late. Snow accumulation tonight up to an inch or maybe less near Juneau with higher amounts south of Taku Inlet. Then a chance of snow in the morning tomorrow and then rain likely with snow accumulation going up to an inch and then highs creeping up, though, to the upper 30s. And a rain likely for Thursday night with lows right around 34 degrees. Right now, here's National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A leading advocate on issues concerning violence against Native women speaks out on the current status of legislation moving through Congress. As many awaited the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, in this past congressional session, several issues emerged, including new provisions that speak of tribal jurisdiction. To date, the reauthorization has not been ratified. As those working to get this act through Congress head back to work on its passage, some advocates think the new year will bring the needed support. Sarah Deer, a Muscogee Creek professor at the William Mitchell College of Law, shared her views on the January 1st edition of Native America Calling.
We were really hopeful, even as late as last night, that we would see the Violence Against Women Act reauthorized in Congress. Sadly, it didn't happen by the deadline, but I'm really hopeful for 2013. I think there's a lot of good energy out in Indian Country, a lot of Native women and men and youth standing strong on this issue. And so one of my hopes for 2013 is that we will see the Violence Against Women Act reauthorized with tribal provisions that will enhance our nation's authority.
She says some apprehension to the tribal provision component of the revised act stems from the lack of confidence in the tribal court system and the prosecution of non-natives.
What we had planned to do with this law is to, what the language from the Senate had was a correction on the Oliphant versus Suquamish Indian tribe. Basically, what it would have done and what it will do when it passes is it will allow tribal governments once again to prosecute people who commit acts of domestic violence in tribal communities, regardless of their race, regardless of whether they're Indian or not. And that will happen. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
The original Violence Against Women Act was passed in 1995 and is put before Congress every 5 years for reauthorization. The U.S. Congress has agreed on a deal to avoid the fiscal cliff, but more negotiations about the government spending are ahead. News blogger Mark Trahant shared his view on Native America Calling yesterday about what budget cuts might mean for Indian Country.
It's going to hit Indian Country particularly hard. When I walk around here in Fort Hall, I remember when I was a youth how many of the buildings were BIA, and now you look at those same buildings and they're almost all tribal. And a lot of that flow of money still comes from the federal government. And so with sequester and some of the other austerity moves that the federal government is going to begin shortly, all of that will filter down to tribal governments fairly quickly.
President Obama is expected to sign the fiscal cliff legislation. A collection of Native American art seized last fall by the federal government will be auctioned in South Dakota later this month. A 16-piece collection is owned by the Sioux Falls-based nonprofit American Indian Services. The organization owes more than $100,000 to the Internal Revenue Service. American Indian Services collected the original art in the early years of the Northern Plains Tribal Arts Show. Cinti Gliska University now manages the show, which is known as the Northern Plains Indian Art Market. The seized art collection was on loan to the Washington Pavilion Visual Arts Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The Argus Leader newspaper reports that President Larry Toll says a local group has formed to try to buy the art collection and keep it on display at the Washington Pavilion. The collection includes sculptures and beadwork pieces. The minimum bid set by the IRS is almost $25,000. During this week in 2010, Stacy Phelps, a 1996 mechanical engineering graduate, was the recipient of a presidential award for excellence in science, mathematics, and engineering mentoring. Phelps of the Oglala Lakota College received the award during a ceremony held on January 6th at the White House. This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
Programming support comes from Bee's Bakery and Bistro, offering paninis and soups as well as cupcakes and cookies. Open Tuesday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday for brunch. Bee's Bakery and Bistro, located downtown on 230 2nd Street.
I feel tears welling up, cold and deep inside, like my heart's from a big break. And the stab of loneliness, sharp and painful, that I may never shake. You might say I was taking it hard when she wrote me off with a call. But don't you wager that'll hide the sorrow when I may break right down and fall. Well, the race is on and here comes pride at the back.
Yes, the race is on. The race is on the air. Pat Race is here with us.
Very clever, Andy Klein. Very clever.
Oh, you old dog, you.
I can't. I don't know.
Any excuse to
I'm
play George
Jones. I'm
dying
to hear the exit music. I don't know.
No, that's right.
The race is over.
You won't know. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's beautiful outside. We should talk about the clouds first.
Gorgeous. There's a minty green glow to the clouds out there. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Cool
and
stuff.
Blue sky.
Over. That's the minty green rainbow effect of Douglas Island.
Yeah.
That's what that is. It's minty fresh over there.
It's minty fresh Douglas Island.
Pat is the owner-operator of Alaska Robotics. So you've got this cool store down there. It's going on, what, 6-7 months of that storefront?
Yeah. We opened in May and... we had a great summer, and it's been a good winter so far, and we're having a lot of fun. We're right down on Front Street, and we've got a little kind of a gallery comic shop thing going on there. A bunch of my artwork, a lot of local artists. We're carrying some local music. We're trying to expand some of that stuff.
It's the go-to place for graphic novels.
We have a lot of graphic novels. It's fun.
Yeah.
And so actually one of the things we're doing for First Friday this week is we're having a student art show of the comic arts, and we're sort of interpreting that loosely. So there's some fan art. Kids have drawn like their favorite characters or they've drawn some of their own characters they developed. We're open to strips and panel comics and things like that, all kinds of however they want to interpret comic art or illustration. And so
is it mostly for like display though, or is it in book form as well?
Oh no, it's we're hanging pieces on the wall.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So tell me about this.
Although I did get to see a cool flip book that it was lined paper pencil work that this girl had done when she was really young, and she was super embarrassed. She brought in this really nice piece of work to hang in the gallery, and her dad shows up with the flip book thing of, she did this when she did this 5 years ago.
Dad.
Look how, it was great. Dad, you're embarrassing me. But it's very good. It was like a Pikachu fan art story. It was really good.
That's cool. Well, back up a little bit and tell me about the theme behind this First Friday piece. It's student art.
Yeah, so we're trying to get art from 6th through 12th graders. And really there's a lot of there's not really like there hasn't been a comic shop in town that I'm aware of in a long time, and so I'm kind of trying to raise the flag and say, hey, we're over here. And so I wanted to get some of the creative kids involved that are in town, and I had a bunch of students come over from Thunder Mountain and JDHS, and I showed them some of my work and how I work digitally and sort of my process, and then we talked about what they're working on, and a lot of them brought art to show me, and we sort of had a kind of a casual critique kind of thing. And
are you finding that most students that are working today are using digital, or is it a mix, or is
no, it? No, actually, it was most of them weren't very aware of the. I think they have access to some of that, but a lot of them aren't using it because some of the digital tools are kind of expensive, getting Photoshop at home and things like that.
Yeah, and then also, like, you have a drawing pad kind of touchpad thing
that
you draw on.
You can get small tablets at home. Yeah. You can get small tablets and work off those, and those aren't too expensive.
That's true, and like iPads and stuff have touch-sensitive ability to.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that that's a growing thing.
Yeah, it definitely is, and I think the nicest thing about it is that you can really. It's a lot easier to polish up your piece, to like get something that's kind of a rough draft and force it into being something that's final.
But you do real art too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
I just pressed the art button on my computer and it, yeah, I get that all the time. It's amazing.
I actually wanted to talk about
digital,
that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that there's that weird perception by people that something created on a computer, that's just a computer thing.
Yeah. The computer did all that work.
The computer did that. Yeah. And it's like, no. That's just my drawing pad. I mean, that's just the thing that I use that has these tools. And
that's my paintbrush.
Yeah. Have you ever felt like there's a conflict there, or have you ever felt like, well, gosh, I really ought to go work in acrylics or oils or something? Or
it really doesn't bother me at all. I think the weirdest thing is that now that I have this gallery, it puts kind of a commercial bend on it. You know, there's a little bit of pressure to pay the rent, and so it's like, okay, someone comes in and they're like, oh, do you have the original? And in the art world, like, you sell the original for much more than the prints,
sure.
And you make a bunch of money off of it, but in the digital world, you don't have an original. You've got like, well, I can't really sell you my computer.
It's a Toshiba. Yeah.
I'll sell you the original and I'll get an upgrade. But it's funny because there oftentimes isn't like an original piece to work from. And I pull in from all kinds of different textures and resources. Like I'll generally start with like a pencil sketch and then I'll scan that in and draw over the top of that on the computer, and it goes through so many layers and processes that it just doesn't really have a, you know, like, this is the original. You are the proud owner of the original.
Yeah, right. Have you worked in acrylics, oils, watercolors, things like that?
Yeah, not in a long time, but I have. Yeah, I've done acrylics and oils, and I experimented with watercolor. Was it the year before last? I think I took one of Avril's classes at the Canvas, and it was great. It was really fun, and
because a lot of your work would to me look like they would have a watercolor. They sort of have a watercolor.
I love watercolor, but it's very hard to work with, and you don't get a lot of flexibility out of it. I mean, you get beautiful mistakes, but you get horrendous ones as well. And so I think that I like doing pen and ink washes a lot. Like when I do sketches, we do drawing night over there, and sometimes I'll pull out the like kind of washed out grays and use that for shading. And
talk about drawing night a little. That's a cool thing you guys do.
Yeah. So on Tuesday nights from 6 to 8, we bring in a model, and we try and bring in different people from the community, and they're clothed and usually actually wearing a costume or some kind of fancy outfit or something like that. And so it's like all ages, all skill levels, and we just do a bunch of poses. And it's a lot of fun. We've had superheroes, and we had a pirate last night, and we have, you know, like a 50s housewife gal came in and was like cleaning things and vacuuming and stuff. And then we had Cameron from the shoe store comes in and like wears crazy shoes that are, I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to like, and then you never really look at people quite the same way as when you're drawing them and you're like, oh my God, your nose is incredible. You have an amazing nose.
Right.
You know? And they're like, that's okay. Thanks.
Just my nose.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of look at people a lot. You're always carrying around a sketch pad, or often you are, and that kind of thing.
I'm trying to get better at drawing. It's coming slowly, but that's like, you have to just do it a lot. So I think that's actually my New Year's resolution this year, is to try and draw every day.
All right.
And I've heard that helps.
Yes. It's not going to hurt. Tell me a little bit more about the store. What kind of you guys are? Like you said, you're expanding into music a little bit.
Well, we really want to carry like fun, good, awesome local stuff. And so one of the things that I'm dating Marion, and she is an amazing musician, and we've got her music. Bridget works at the store. Bridget
Kuhar. This is Marion Call, and then Bridget Kuhar is part of Playboy Spaceman.
And so Bridget and George are like phenomenal. I've talked to Liz Snyder, trying to get her music in there, and we're going to probably have that pretty soon. And I just really want to connect with some of the. There's some really amazing people in this town that we're lucky to have here, and I want to like put their work out there and make sure people know where to find it and have access to it. And then also we've been getting, you know, a fair amount of tourist traffic coming through there in the summertime, and I'd love for people outside of Juneau to connect with that and be like, oh, I found this little band here in Juneau, Alaska, and I can't believe how amazing they are. I mean, it was so cool to see Bridget and George written up on the, you had something to do with that, but they're written up on the NPR music blog.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy, amazing.
Right.
So good.
But deserved.
Yeah, and well-deserved. Yeah.
I mean, they're incredibly talented and wonderful, but...
And there's like all these big-name giant musicians, and there's like Juneau, Alaska. I love it.
Right. But yeah, and sometimes we feel like we're in a little bit of a backwater here, but it's great to... But we do have this opportunity to reach out to the world and to everyone in the world.
We don't even have to reach; they come here.
Yeah, that's right. But we have to have the product that's not just the little plastic totem pole things,
Or Tanzanite. I would love to, through our store, I would love to provide people some stuff that's actually made here and more contemporary.
Yeah. I think that's great. Well, it's an awesome store, and it's a great place just to go and browse.
Yeah, it's totally fun to like just come flip through stuff. Yeah. And actually, one of the popular misconceptions that we've been fighting is this like comic books is for kids kind of thing, or comic books is the Incredible Hulk smashing stuff, like kind of the superhero mentality. But we've got like comics on Richard Feynman and like Bertrand Russell, and I mean, you name it. There are comics about the Holocaust, and there are massively depressing, like uplifting. There are comics about everything, and I would love to – I will issue a challenge. If you don't think there's a comic book for you, I would be happy to help you find one.
I'll tell you what. If you think that comic books aren't in some ways sophisticated enough, you can just pick up Dave Hunsecker's new
– Oh, yeah. That's an amazing, like, locally made piece, too. That's incredible.
A local talent, of course, it's basically a national product, but Dave Hunsecker happens to live here and is an incredibly talented screenwriter, and this is his first graphic novel. It's already been nominated for Graphic Novel of the Year at Comic-Con, and, so it's a first-class product, but, I mean, it is an incredibly sophisticated, dense piece of work. It's big. It's not a quick read. I'm reading it right now. It's not a quick read.
Yeah.
And it's not goofball... comic-y stuff. Deep and dark and incredibly interesting and incredibly pertinent to where we live. It's all about the Northwest Indian culture, and so it's the graphic novels have taken this huge step. What do you just while we've got time? So does that all go back to the Dark Knight? Does that all go back to what is that? What is this renaissance in graphic novels? Where do you think?
Actually,
it
I think
comes
it comes
from
Japan or in other countries, like outside of America, France, Japan are two really strong ones, but many other countries as well. They just, like, people read comic books, and they do it on the subway, and they're waiting for something, and they'll have their serialized thing, and that's not uncommon, and they are all kinds of genres, and for whatever reason, it didn't really develop that way here. So I feel like...
It just stayed a kid's thing here more than anything, you know? Just somehow it stayed in the
kind of
realm of...
relegated to novelty.
Yeah. Or just the thing that we all obsess about when we're kids, and then some of us still geek out about it as adults. The DC and Marvel comics is sort of the thing that seems to pervade, or in my day, kind of pervaded everything.
Yeah, but I think it was kind of this cyclical thing where you would read that comic, and that's what you thought comics were, and then the people that made comics, and it just kind of became this snake eating its tail.
Right.
And then one day someone said, hey, we can make a comic that's like a little more serious. Let's try that. And you're right. There's comics like The Watchmen and The Dark Knight, and those were definitely superhero comics, but they had stronger characters and better story arcs, and they took it in a kind of a new direction. There's that like gritty 80s era of comic books
right.
that hey, wait, these don't even have to be about superheroes. They can be, like, let's do Sin City. It's like a detective novel. And then, oh, wait, it doesn't have to be about detectives. Let's do it about scientists. And,
right, yeah, yeah. And so people who are just, instead of writing novels, they'd team up with an artist and then kind of it would develop from there.
And I think there are a lot of parallels between picture books. Like, children's books have, I mean, they can be about any subject, but they're basically comic books. They're panels, single-page panels of this story that progresses.
Yeah. Well, I got you here as well. Talk to me about Jump Festival. What's happening
That? So Juno Underground Motion Picture Society, submission deadline is the 18th of January, and we'll be having shows the following weekend. I believe that's like the 24th, and we'll be at the Goldtown Nickelodeon as usual. And submission, the only rule we have for submissions is that they be 10 minutes or less, and we pretty much take everything.
And please, just for the sake of these guys who I know, submit early if you can.
Because it is helpful.
It's helpful, but it's so tough that last week to watch you guys scrambling around, because there's always people, I've got it, it's almost ready.
Yeah.
And then, oh, brother. Yeah, so.
We just leave Aaron in the editing room with a block of cheese, and right. Lou and I come back and it's done.
Yeah. And if people are maybe thinking about it or working on something, can they – I know you guys can offer them some help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now is a great time. Like, a couple weeks out is to come in and, hey, I've been working on this. I've got – what can I do to make it better? And happy, always happy to just, like, sit down with someone and look through their work and say, oh, yeah, maybe you can cut this here or add this there, or this will help your audio or whatever it is that – might give it just a little bit of a nudge in the right direction.
Yeah. All right, so back to First Friday. It's student?
Yep, student art show, the comic arts. So, and just kind of whatever people brought us. Today's the deadline, so there's actually been a few kids come in today with stuff, and it's fun to...
Oh, so they still maybe have about an hour left. If they're hearing this now?
If you're in 6th to 12th grade, you have until 7 o'clock tonight is that right? 6 o'clock tonight to swing by the store.
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. That's not going to work, is it? But if you've got something that you've made that's like a piece of art that's comic-themed, you could bring it in.
I'm sure there's tons of people out there, young folks out there who have some cool thing that maybe never
This was my 5,472-page graphic novel that I made on printer paper.
Start, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, there's amazing work happening, and I just kind of want to bring some of it to light. A lot of the people that I've met so far are really shy about this too, so I'm hoping that this will be a chance for them to exhibit their art in a public way that maybe they haven't had before.
Yeah, don't be shy about it. Show it. It's just Juno.
Yeah.
Come on. You know, we'll be fine with it. Everyone's nice here. All right, Pat Race from Alaska Robotics. It's First Friday. It's student art in the comic area, right?
Yep.
It's all happening. First Friday starts about 4 o'clock or so?
Yeah, about 4 or 4:30.
And you guys are right down next to the Gross Alaska 20th Century Theater down there. It's a cool store. If you haven't been in it before, go check it out. Browse. Look at all the cool stuff. If you haven't thought about graphic novels in a long time or even know what they necessarily are that much, go check out the store. It's really cool.
We also have a 50-cent bin of, like, the old ones. Those are fun to go through.
Yeah, very nice. The water damage bin?
Actually, some of them are really good. Some of them are from my collection when I was a kid. And we got this guy that comes in, like, religiously once a week and just flips through all of them. It's great.
That's good stuff. All right, Alaska Robotics is happening First Friday. Thanks, Pat, for coming in.
All right.
Here's Jack Nietzsche with The Last Race.
No, you got me.
Thank you.
coming up on a junior afternoon. We're going to be talking to Rob Royes and Kimberly Naylor. Kimberly from the City Museum, and Rob Royes, a really great artist who lives in town here. If you haven't seen his work before in Annie Kales or other First Fridays, you can check it out this First Friday at the City Museum. They're going to be in here in a little bit. And we're going to hear from Garrison Keillor and Writer's Almanac in just a minute. It's mostly cloudy skies for the rest of today and then partly cloudy tonight with increasing clouds and snow late. Snow accumulation about an inch or less and lows around 28 degrees. Then a chance of snow tomorrow morning and then rain likely. Snow accumulation up to about an inch tomorrow, but highs getting around 37 degrees. That stuff's going to melt and rain's going to come in. Rain likely for Thursday night and a chance of rain for Friday as well. And rain is in the forecast for the foreseeable future through Saturday and Saturday night. Writer's Almanac coming up in just a second.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 2nd of January, 2013. It's the birthday of Roger Miller, born Fort Worth, Texas, 1936. We know him best for his song, King of the Road, Trailers for Sale or Rent, Rooms to Let, 50 Cents. Though he said his favorite of all his songs was You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. It's the birthday of Christopher Durang, born Montclair, New Jersey, 1949, raised Roman Catholic, went to a high school taught by monks, thought he might become a monk himself, but instead he became a playwright. And when he was 28, he had his first big hit with the play Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All for You, which the New York Times described as a satire about a demonic nun. He went on to write Beyond Therapy, Baby with the Bathwater, and currently on Broadway, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Today's the birthday of cartoonist Linda Barry, born in Richland Center, Wisconsin, 1956. She's the creator of Ernie Pook's Comique, a weekly strip that ran in alternative papers for nearly 30 years. Her friend Matt Groening was the man who created The Simpsons, but the market for Linda Barry's comics sort of dried up in 2008, so she moved on to other things. And now she goes around the country giving workshops called Writing the Unthinkable for people, she says, bartenders, janitors, office workers, anyone who's given up on being a writer but still wonders what it might be like to write. Here's a poem for today by Jacqueline Berger, The Conductor. There's no mention, of course, in the program that the conductor has Parkinson's. He enters the stage, stands for a moment facing the audience, his hands by his sides, tapping air. Then he holds them together, an act of gratitude. We're gathered, we can do this, and of firmness, each hand forcing the other to be still. His expression, darkly bemused, the good news, bad news. I've lived long enough to lose so much, or maybe he's staving off our sympathy. Don't clap because of this. Then he turns his back to us, begins his work, Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony. No baton, and from behind, his body is jerky as a boy's, jumpy with excitement. His hands shake when they scoop the sections of the orchestra, as though pulling a weighted net from the sea. Still, I wonder if this work is easier than taking on the ordinary objects of a day, buttons, keys, and pens. I am an old man, he must think, when he looks in the mirror, briefly naked, before trading the bathrobe for the tie and tails. And when he turns to us again, after the last movement, he looks both old and young, his face washed of the expression in the program photograph, clearly taken years before, one eyebrow slightly raised, his smile more satisfied than happy. Now he shows us his innocence, if innocence is what the face unconstructed can be called. What else can he do while his fingers tap their useless code, while the audience in rows rises from their seats, still clapping? What can he do but show us who he is, a man standing too close to the edge, edge no one can call him back from? The Conductor, a poem by Jacqueline Berger from The Gift That Arrives Broken, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Child, dang me, they ought to take a rope and hang me high from the highest tree. Woman, would you weep for me?
Yeah, Roger Miller's birthday. Little Roger Miller there. Dang me. The great Roger Miller. Great to know it was his birthday today. On Writer's Almanac there from Garrison Keillor. Once again, the forecast for today is mostly cloudy skies the rest of the day, with a chance of rain and then snow is in the forecast for tonight, with accumulation just about an inch or less. And then that snow is going to change to rain tomorrow. There'll be some snow, a chance of that in the morning, and then rain likely. Snow accumulation for tomorrow, another inch, but highs then getting around 37 degrees. Rain likely for tomorrow night as well. And rain is in the forecast for Friday, Saturday, and also Sunday and Sunday night. Rain likely, highs around 38 degrees is the pretty consistent forecast for the rest of the week. If you want to be on a Juno Afternoon, you can call Jeff Brown anytime at 463-6425. If you've got an organization that's doing something interesting you think people should know about, a charity organization, a business that's doing something interesting, or if you're an interesting person, call up Jeff Brown and get booked on a Juno Afternoon and let people know about it. 463-6425 is the number to call. The Wearable Art Entry Deadline is coming up. That's January 7th. So if you're an artist that wants to perform in and be a part of wearable art, you've got some ideas for a wild costume for wearable art, let them know by January 7th. The deadline application, the deadline is on the website jahc.org, and the application is there on the website. And the deadline is January 7th, which is coming up just 5 days from now in this new year. Happy New Year, everyone. It's all about Friday on this Wednesday, First Friday, and we're going to be talking to Kimberly Naylor and Rob Royce in just a moment about their upcoming First Friday at the City Museum. Tuesday, Wednesday, break my heart. All Thursday doesn't even start. It's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, wait. Sunday always comes to end. Friday never hesitate. I don't care if Monday's black. Tuesday, Wednesday, hard to tell. Thursday, never. We'll be talking about those First Friday events here in just a little bit. But right now, Eagle Crest Report with Jeffra Clow, who's up there on the hill right now. Jeffra, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Andy. Thanks for having me on the show this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on. And I guess we have to thank Mother Nature for all the great snow, huh?
Oh, yeah. We've got snow. It was kind of quite a blustery, windy night last night. So the snow blew around a little bit at first. When we first did the snow report this morning, it kind of looked more like we were going to have around 12 to 15 inches, but when patrol actually got out there, we got 6 inches. But we're happy with the 6 inches that we got, and we've been very busy today, so everyone's got big smiles on their faces.
Yeah, how has the holiday season gone so far?
The holiday season has gone great, Andy. We've got good snow. We have a lot of folks visiting from around Southeast. And been up here learning how to ski and snowboard, refining their skills. Like I said, their rental shop's been hopping, food service has been hopping, snow sports school's been hopping. So we're smiling, and so is everybody else that's up here.
And it's a pretty cool month here because January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, right? Now that's something that's kind of a big program.
That is. January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, and we are part of that big program. This is a national grassroots program that was started about 4 years ago nationally to just try and get people to get outside, move in the wintertime, and learn how to ski and snowboard. And we jumped on with the Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month organization several years ago and have just had great success with it ever since. And so we've got some special programs, specially priced programs, just trying to get the word out that winter up at Eagle Crest is way better than winter down in Juneau.
It's better away from sea level.
Oh, it is, yeah. And that we have snow and that we actually it's winter up here.
Yeah, I mean it's so cool when you get up there, you really realize, wow, this is such a transformed landscape in the winter time, and you just can't see it unless you're up at those high altitudes.
No, you really can't. And I know that many times I even get caught in it down in town, and it's raining in town, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, well, I don't really want to go to work today. But then as soon as I get up to the snow line, I'm like, yes, I'm glad I came to work today. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to encourage everybody in Juneau to come out, see what we have to offer. If you go onto our website at skijuneau.com, you'll see a banner that says Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, and if you click on that, you'll see all of our specials that we have for January.
And that Ski and Snowboard Month is actually, that's kind of like a national program, right?
It is a national program, and many ski areas across the country participate in this program. There is a website called Ski and Snowboard Month, and we're part of this program, and actually I'm happy to say, Andy, that we are kind of one of the models. Our Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month programs are one of the models for other smaller ski areas across the country. They use us as a demonstration of how well it works and how you can get people up here to learn how to ski and snowboard.
And what's cool is the packages that you guys have are, there's like beginner packages, but then there's also like people who want to get back into skiing and riding and second time skiers and all that kind of stuff too. So it's set up for all levels of folks.
It is. And what we've seen is with the arrival of our Porcupine chairlift, which it's in its third year now, but it is so much easier to learn how to ski and snowboard than it ever was. So we're really trying to work hard to attract those folks who maybe tried it 10, 15 years ago, maybe when they were in high school or junior high. Between the chairlift that we have now, the equipment we have now, we really have found some huge success rates. And we're just trying to get everybody out here to share the passion that we have of the mountain and get them up here and hook them on this sport.
And I think the equipment, that's an interesting point. If you haven't, if you tried it, you know, maybe you skied a long time ago, you haven't skied for 10 years or so, the leaps that the equipment have made in the past 10 years is really phenomenal.
Oh, it is, Andy. I mean, it's everything from, you know, the snowboard equipment that we have Burton snowboards, and they're what's called the Learn to Ride snowboard, specifically designed with a beginner snowboarder in mind. And the technology is there just to make it so much easier to learn how to balance on that board and turn the board. And then our Vocal rental fleet, same things, designed with the learner in mind, making it so much easier to actually start a turn And we just... you just should have been up here today, Andy, to see all of the happy folks. It's just so much fun.
Hey, is there a new thing that's happening now up on the slopes that you're seeing more and more of, a new type of equipment, a new type of thing that people are trying maybe if you haven't been up on the hill for 10 years, you'd be like saying, hey, what are those guys doing?
Well, the one new thing that we have going on, and it's actually not new. It's been around for many, many years. But, you know, if you're not interested in maybe letting gravity take a hold of you so much, there's Nordic skiing. And we do have classic Nordic rentals right now that we have in our shop. This is the first year. So we really have got some great Nordic programs as well.
And you're renting just the classic style?
Yes. Right now, this year, we just rent classic skis and just adults. But we have a great Learn to Nordic series that starts on Saturday or Sunday, and it's a 3-week program. And it's a great program to, again, get introduced to either classic skiing or skate skiing, or if you've only done it a couple times and you want to refine your skills, there you have a program for that as well.
Well, that's great to know that rentals are available up there now as well in Nordic, yeah.
It is, and we've seen several rentals go out. And people have been out on our lower Nordic trails just having a great time.
Yeah, it's a amazing way to get outside and, of course, incredibly good for cardiovascular health as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, all of it is just, again, the whole point of Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month is to encourage people to get outside in the winter and be active. And you and I both know, Andy, that sometimes the winter downtown in town, it's kind of hard to convince ourselves to get outside.
It beats you down a little bit, you know? It just, that rain in the face. And you realize, boy, it's in the upper 30s and it's just raining on my face. And then you think, boy, you look up and, oh, at about 800 feet, it's not raining anymore. It's snowing. And
no. That's,
there you go. Eagle Crest is beautiful, snowy conditions.
Yep. Yeah, it is. So we are just trying to get the word out, get the community of Juneau to go, hey, it's 2013 and I think I should learn how to ski or snowboard.
Okay. Well, Jeffra, thanks so much. There's the Eagle Crest Report, and hope you get lots of folks signing up for these special Learn to Ski or Snowboard specials that you guys are running this month of January, the Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month.
Well, thanks for having me on the show this afternoon, Andy. And if folks want more information, they can visit our website at skijuneau.com.
Okay. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
All right.
Bye.
Me so thought that I could call your bluff, but now the lines are clear enough. Life's not pretty, even though I try so hard to make it so. Such cold distress. How did I ever?
Oh, yeah, snowblind. Well, that's what's happening up in Eagle Crest. People are snowblind up there. But happening down here in the city at the City Museum, first Friday, Rob Royes is going to be showing Reverie. Rob's on the phone with us right now with Kimberly Naylor of the City Museum. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Great, great. So, Rob, well, first, Kimberly, tell me a little bit about the focus that City Museum has and why you decided that Rob was a great choice for you.
Well, to be honest, Jane Lindsay, the museum director, set up this with Rob. I know that we've had some exhibitions with him in the past.
I thought you were going to say, I know we've had some problems in the past, but...
No.
Oh, okay.
Know me that well.
He installed today, and it looks gorgeous. It's going to be very, very nice. So
I haven't been this nervous in a long time, Andy.
Yeah, well, it's all right. It's just me, man. Don't worry about it.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
It's just Juno. It's just Juno listening.
You know, I think it's been like 30 years since I heard Snowblind.
Yes.
I had to follow that.
And another 30 would be fine, right?
Oh, yeah. They are the best of times.
Yes, yes. Rob, tell me, the name of your show is Reverie. Tell me a little bit about the focus of your show.
Well, you know, my work focuses on what it's like to be in Juneau and living here in Juneau, and a lot of these paintings are based on like daydreams or fantasies about Juneau, you know, fantasy kind of loosely, but a reverie is basically a daydream on a certain idea. And a lot of these paintings kind of fall into these Juneau myths or stories. There's the painting called Reverie is a painting. There was a story during the mine collapse over in Douglas about a man, a miner, who went back down to get his two mules out of the mine as it was collapsing. And so that painting is actually kind of just a daydream fantasy on that. So that's kind of where it comes from.
And is it, how would you describe the look of the, is there a consistent look to the paintings, do you think?
There's lots of stars, less circles.
Less circles and more stars.
Yeah.
All right.
Figurative work in it too, which is something people are kind of surprised to see come from me. For me, it kind of feels like going back to something I did a couple of decades ago. But
figurative meaning using human figures.
Yeah.
So, but that I've seen your work in that when you were doing a lot of life drawing stuff and life painting stuff.
Yep, exactly. And this kind of stems from that. A little bit more advanced work on it and more paintings based on the drawings.
A lot of times your paintings can tend to be a monochromatic palette. Is that happening as well?
I would say so, but there's some colors in here. There's some nice blues and some teal and orange.
So it'll match my couch. That's great.
Yeah. I haven't seen your couch.
I just throw that in.
Worn out and beat up.
I always throw that in for artists. They love to hear that.
Makaton's had a really great story about how his painting size was based on the size of the couch at the time.
That's good. You know, you were just saying that your paintings kind of focus on the experience of living in Juneau. How do you feel that Juneau has affected your paintings? I mean, what has Juneau done to you as a painter?
That's a really hard question to answer. It's like... it's who I am. You know, I grew up here, although technically I wasn't born here. We moved here when I was two, but everything about my art has this kind of Juneau filter on it. You know, they're paintings of the people here, the locations here, the stories from here. The way I paint is this kind of layering of various mediums on top of each other, which is kind of this misty type thing and a little bit obscuring. And so I think my work is basically Juneau.
So it's just throughout the fiber of what you do as an artist, Juneau's
yeah,
just
exactly.
There. Yeah. Well, Kimberly, is the City Museum doing First Fridays regularly now, or that seems to me like kind of a new phenomena?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty new in this position. You know, I started in the fall. But since I have been here, yeah, we're doing a First Friday pretty much every month with an opening for the solo artist. And, you know, Rob, his paintings really match our mission for the City Museum. We're really trying to get local artists that are really connected to the city and to Juneau. And it's really nice to have his paintings that match our mission. So.
That's an interesting thing to think about, Rob, because when I first started being a fan of yours, you know, maybe 20 years ago now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You wouldn't have been considered someone who, you know, you know what I mean? You wouldn't have been considered
yeah.
someone who you know, you were an alternative. You were very much of a part of an alternative movement of artists in Juneau.
Yeah, it's nice that Juneau's come around.
Finally got some sense.
The paintings look lovely.
I finally bought enough people shots that they came around.
Yeah, that's right. That's
although
right.
I
yeah.
Really a shot, so. <For the record. laughs>
Done a lot of work there. Done a lot of work. Are there contemporary artists? I'm just sort of thinking about those artists that even 20 years ago, it seems like there's a kind of a group of artists there that have matured through the years and have come and gone through Juno. Can you think of other contemporaries that are still working in Juno that you were working with 20 years ago?
Well, you know, the big one is John Stoll, and he passed away just a couple of years ago. But, you know, there's...
I mean, we're always on Facebook, and I've been seeing some recent posts from Rick Boston on Facebook that was reminding me, oh, yeah, Rick Boston. Wow, he was really cool and had some great artwork. And, you know, it's interesting to think about those guys.
You know, the best art show I've ever seen in Juneau was, and not to toot my own horn, but it was me, Rick Boston, and John Stoll, and I think we had five people come to it. Times have changed a little bit.
That reminds me of the best party KXL ever threw.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It's great, but no one knew. What are you going to do, man? You know?
it's hard being on the cusp of something new, and it's really strange for me being old now and having that experience. I still don't know what to think of it.
He's not old.
He's not an old guy, no. But I know what you're saying. I mean, it is. You know, you're certainly no longer some punk kid.
Yeah, but I feel like I have more in common with those punk kids than anybody else. But not really. They kind of scowl at me now.
Do you feel like your work has matured?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In what ways?
Well, you know, you just get to know the paint better. You know, it's like being married for a long time, where you just kind of start to know a person's habits, like this is how much milk they want in their coffee, or these things, you know, sugar, you know, they don't like that much garlic or cooked onions or whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's like the paint has this certain behavior with the ground that you're working on, and, you know, how much water you're using and stuff like that. It's a very intimate process, and once you get there, it's pretty magic. It's pretty wonderful.
Has that stuff sort of stabilized for you, your mediums?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I used to experiment a lot, and now it's just I work with acrylic, I work with pastel, and I work with watercolor in combination with each other.
And on canvas?
Paper, and the stuff called multimedia artboard, which is just basically paper, but it's been pressed with epoxy.
What made you kind of settle on those elements?
Well, I have really bad lungs, so I can't use oil paint. So that kind of pushed me into acrylic, and then I started working with it and started really enjoying it. With acrylic, you don't really have to worry about the construction of a painting. It's going to be archival pretty much no matter what you do. You know, with oil paint, you have to do, there's rules you have to apply and follow. Otherwise, the painting's just going to fall apart in 25, 50 years. Acrylic is just, you know, go crazy with it.
But the thing I've heard from artists about acrylic is the mixing, you know, the drying of it. It dries fairly quickly, so you have to, you know, that's a consideration.
Yeah, they're sissies.
Those people.
You can quote me on that
one. I'll tell Alan you said so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Alan Monroe uses lots of acrylic.
No, he does. He I think he uses almost exclusively acrylic.
Yeah, I think he would use a less kind word than sissy.
Yes. Well, Rob, tell me a little bit more about what other stuff you're working on right now.
You know, I've just been lots of figurative work, just in trying to apply this, like, mythology of my youth and the mythology of Juno to figurative work.
Well, and that's interesting. So can you explain that, what you mean by mythology, especially when you say mythology of Juno?
Well, you know, there's these Juno stories that you kind of grow up with. And, you know, people who grow up in Juno, you got these, you know, the mine collapse, the founding of Juno with Joe Juno and Dick Harris and Chief Cowie and, and I forget his name in Sitka, but he's there, you know, and how Juno came to be, and these stories of, like, the Birdman of Alcatraz. He killed his first man here in Juno,
mm-hmm.
and these stories you hear from the old timers, you know, by old timers, I mean, it's like old hippies now.
Right.
You know, they have these great stories of the things that used to happen and, you know, things like that. That's, for me, the mythology of Juno.
Yeah.
And you try and...
And then the mythology of growing up here is what, that effect that Juno has on an upbringing?
Well, when you grow up here, you are intimately involved with a core group of people. And one of the people I've been working with, a model of mine, she was in a different group of people, but we kind of shared some friends, you know, and while she's posing for me, we're talking about things. And so I got to hear the other side of stories that, you know, like, oh, this happened and this happened. Then I get to hear the real dirt on what happened and things that and that's kind of what I mean, too.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Kimberly, tell me, do you guys have something set up for the next First Friday? And is this something that's do you know what's happening next?
I do, yeah. We have Trevor Gong is going to be opening on February 1st, a Friday.
Cool.
And, yeah, he's very successful in his work, and we're really excited to have him again. So,
and then the work of Rob's work will stay up all month until you set up for that next show.
Exactly. Yeah, Rob will take down on January the 26th.
Last Saturday in January.
Saturday. So full month of Rob's work.
All right. So First Friday starts at about 4 o'clock.
4:30 to 7:30.
Okay. Great. 4:30 to 7:30. You can see the work of Rob Roy's. At the City Museum. It's entitled Reverie. And Rob and Kimberly Naylor, thanks so much for joining us.
How about some Billy Squire in there?
You want some Billy Squire? I was going to play a song by a band called Surf Club. It's a song called Reverie.
Oh, hey, that sounds great, too. That
sounds good. All right, here it comes.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks again.
Andy.
All right. Reverie, that's the name of the one-man art show happening at the City Museum from Rob Roy's. That's going to be seen on First Friday. And Pat Race, Alaska Robotics, their First Friday is a student work concentrating on the inspiration of comics in work. And we want to thank Pat Race, Rob Roy's, Kimberly Naylor for joining us as well. And also Jeff Reclow up at Eagle Crest, where the skiing is good. And it's Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month up there all month long, with specials running all month long to get you back into it if you dropped skiing or snowboarding, or if you've never tried it, to get back up there as well. And also interesting that there's Nordic ski rentals now available at EcoCrest as well. So if you want to head up to one of the loops up there and maybe bring along a friend who doesn't have gear, or if you don't have gear, you can rent it right there on the mountain up at EcoCrest, your local ski area, the biggest little mountain in the world, EcoCrest. Well, that's it for Juno Afternoon for today. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for joining me. Once again, the weather coming up here in Juno is going to be mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day, with a chance of rain and highs right around 36 degrees. But then getting colder tonight, and snow accumulation up to an inch tonight, with partly cloudy skies this evening and increasing clouds with snow late. Lows around 28 degrees tonight, and for tomorrow, a chance of snow in the morning, then rain likely, with snow accumulation up to an inch and highs around 37 degrees. Rain is likely for Thursday night as well, and mostly cloudy skies for Friday with a chance of rain. Cloudy and a chance of rain for Friday night, and rain in the forecast for Saturday, Saturday night, and Sunday night as well. So we got a wet couple of days ahead of us here to round out the rest of the week here at sea level. But all the temperatures in the mid to upper 30s, and that means snow up on Eagle Crest, so it'll continue to get good snow conditions up on Eagle Crest, and that's great news. For more news, we're going to go to NPR News coming up right now. NPR Headlines is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.